Police tracked her down 40 miles away. She was intoxicated. More on these stories at townhall.com.
The views and opinions of shows on KCNR are those of the hosts, guests, and callers only, and do not necessarily reflect those of the staff, management, or advertisers of KCNR Radio.
Good morning, Jefferson. How's everybody doing this bright and sunny day here in Northern California, soon to be Jefferson? I'm here with my trusty co-host, Terry Raposa. Good morning, Terry.
Morning, Wynn. How you doing, buddy?
Great, great. And Mr. Bob Martin, who always keeps us in line. Thank you, Bob.
It's not easy. good morning, Wynn and Terry. And we have not had many bright, sunny days lately, so this is nice this morning.
Kind of a first for a while, huh? We're getting a little bit of water here in the North State, that liquid sunshine that everybody loves. It's probably getting tired of, but guess what? We love it anyway.
Oh, yeah. And boy, did we need it, huh?
We did. You know, we're just having a couple dams fall apart, things. Due to preparation, you know, with the Bureau of Water Reclamation and State of California and all the people that are responsible for inspections. They're not doing their jobs.
Oh, come on.
Accountability. Who's going to be accountable for all that good stuff?
Yeah, well, you know, the rule of law doesn't apply, neither does accountability in the state of California.
No, the taxpayers just have to pay more for it. So that's what will happen.
Yep, they need more money.
And the user fees of the state or the state facilities and, you know, specifically the lakes, that'll be going up.
Yep.
You've got to recover the cost somehow.
Well, tomorrow night at the Patriot meeting at 6 o'clock on 3276 Bocelli Lane at the Eagle's Nest Church, we'll be having Mark Baird, but we won't be having Mark Baird. We'll be having Mark Baird on video with some clips of what he had talked about at the Second Amendment meeting that we had a few weeks ago.
Mm-hmm.
We'll be discussing the Second Amendment. We'll be going through that. There were some great things that came out, and we'll be discussing that. So come in and... This is going to be a tremendous video that was put together. I believe that Robert Exter is the one who put this together, and it's just remarkable because it'll talk about a lot of positions with the Second Amendment, which sometimes people don't make a position one way or another, especially our law enforcement folks.
Mm-hmm.
And in this particular case, there were several sound bites that you'll hear where people have to make a decision. Are they going to stay with their constituents and back the people, or are they going to continue to follow unconstitutional laws that California's passing?
That ought to be interesting. Everybody should come and check it out. And before that meeting happens, we have our Jefferson meeting. And again, we have Jefferson meetings here for Shasta County in the Redding area at 5:30 every Monday night. And so just come on in, check it out. We have two proponents to that. If you're a first-timer for Jefferson and just want to get some questions answered and so forth, we have one area where you can go, and myself and another gentleman, Chris, will be hosting that and discussing all the logistics, I guess, if you will, about Jefferson and what's going on and why we're doing Jefferson and the way we're doing it and why we're doing it. So you can get up to speed so when you go to the other meeting, you'll already have that stuff behind you. You'll understand what's going on. Keeping in mind the people that are in the other meeting have been doing this for 3 years. So they know they're very well versed. They've been out there on the front lines, you know, passing out brochures, collecting signatures, and being at all the home shows, garden shows, all those kind of things, rodeos, you name it. They've been there, parades. They've been out there in the front lines passing the word, getting the word, learning, and getting all this knowledge attained as they can. And as things shift around, they're very flexible in doing that. So they're up to speed on what's going on. But for the new people that are coming in and just curious and want to find out more about it, we have a separate meeting there, but at the same time at 5:30. So please come check it out and be happy to answer your questions. And maybe we'll learn something from you as well. So come check it out.
And I'm sure everybody out there is curious as to California becoming a sanctuary state.
Yes.
Yeah, SB 54 passed the Senate. Hasn't passed the Assembly yet, but I'm sure that's just a rubber stamp. Anyway, one other thing I wanted to bring up is that there is a stance now against that, and that is that was first done by the Tehama County Board of Supervisors on February 7th. And in essence, what they did is they passed resolution number 2017-16, which is declaring that Tehama County complies with the federal immigration laws and does not constitute sanctuary jurisdiction. So that's really kind of a neat thing that's going on. And Bob Williams, who is on the Tehama County Board of Supervisors, who brought this initiative, or excuse me, this resolution forward, is also the chairman of RCRC, and that's the Rural Counties.
No, I'm sorry. I was going to say, what is that?
That's the Rural Counties of California, and they will be meeting this coming Wednesday. And Mr. Williams will be putting that forward, this resolution forward, to the other counties. And we know six other counties are already interested in doing this. That's a stand against the sanctuary state. And one last thing on that. I talked to Orlene Curley yesterday, who is a principal in a group called the Eagle Forum, which has been fighting for liberty for years. Anyway, Santa Rosa has just become a sanctuary city. However, they're calling them the indivisible cities. And apparently they had 200 protesters there and 65 people who spoke for a sanctuary city and only 5 that spoke against. So we can see that it's running rampant as far as the left wanting to do all these unconstitutional positions when it comes to immigration, which the state really doesn't have jurisdiction over.
So Santa Rosa, which is a liberal area, just North Bay area, is going to be a sanctuary or indivisible city.
Yes.
So keep that in mind when you hear those two terms. They're the same. They're one and the same. Sanctuary or indivisible. They're just rephrasing it. It's going to be the same rules, same playbook by the same players. So we need to make sure that we're well-versed on this kind of stuff. So when people are talking about certain things, and if you know, you get asked if you support something one way or the other, you know exactly what you're supporting and what you're fighting for. And that's what Jefferson's all about. We're fighting for not having this kind of garbage. We don't want to have this kind of stuff happening within the borders of our state, of our sovereign state. It's important that we have the rule of law so that we are safe and we know what we can do every day, every minute of the day. So it's important that we do that.
With that, we have a caller. Richard, how you doing?
Good morning, Richard.
Hi, guys. Good morning. Can you hear me okay?
Yes.
So I posted last night on Reading Patriots about the AB 424, which is just introduced last week. Basically takes away the superintendent in school's ability to allow concealed weapons on campuses now. So another bite out of that apple. So coincidentally, if you've noticed our local news lately, there's been some stories about that. And I've actually been the one that's been pushing that. And so interesting that 2-3 weeks after these local news stories that Assemblyman McCarthy introduces this new bill to now negate this little push to keep our kids safe. So thanks, guys. Great show.
Thank you.
Thank you. I wonder what part of infringe they don't understand.
They don't understand the whole definition of infringement, apparently. That'd be my guess.
And I believe, is it...
We've got Round Mountain Bob on the line,
Mountain?
Too.
Here. There he is. Okay. Hey, Bob. How
good
you
morning,
doing?
Good morning, Bob.
Yeah, good morning, fellas. Hey, you know, since we have all our meetings about Jefferson, can we get Mr. Tom Bashenko to come up and see if we can become a county that does not want this stuff here in Shasta County? And maybe we can go to our county supervisors and tell them we don't want it neither.
Our county supervisors already know about this, Bob, and Sally.
I figured they would.
Sally did talk to Les Baugh last week, who's still weighing the situation. Reverend Baugh is still weighing it. I don't know what there is to weigh.
What do they have to weigh? You either win or lose.
Well, I think that he's probably waiting for Wednesday, this coming Wednesday the 15th, when RCRC meets. And and that's where all the counties will be. By the way, that is open to the public. People can go and observe this particular meeting.
Where is that Wednesday?
Well, I'm going to wait for Sally to call in because I think she knows.
Okay.
But she's going to call in about something else, so I'm sure she can give us that information. Or if somebody has that information of where the RCRC meeting is, just enter it into the chat room. So I think we want to go to, we have a guest coming on here very shortly, Dean Wilson from Del Norte County, a former sheriff. So thanks, Bob. We need to go to a break right now.
You bet.
So with that, ladies and gents, guess what time it is? It's time for 51. The time has come for 51.
Did you know that California was never supposed to be just one state? Before the state was formed in 1850, there was discussion of forming three states instead of one. California has an area larger than seven East Coast states combined, and it takes 14 hours to drive from one end of the state to the other. California is simply too large to govern. Rural communities are being outvoted by more densely populated areas. The state of Jefferson is the solution. Please visit SOJ51.net to show your support.
If you are running your own business, you already know that if there are 1,000 items on your to-do list, you really have 3,000 things to get done. Success in business is in the details. You need help. Let the smart professionals at Five Star Bank help you take care of those financial details. Yes, smart people doing good business. Life is 10% of what happens to us and 90% of how we react to it. Be positive. Those at the top of the mountain did not fall there. Visit us at Five Star Bank and let us show you how we specialize in emerging business and commercial real estate. Five Star Bank also specializes in hard work, working hard for those that believe that success is just on the other side of the next opportunity. Thomas Jefferson was a great believer in opportunity, for he found that the harder he worked, the more he had of it. Your time is as valuable as your success. So visit us at Five Star Bank, 358 Hartnell in Reading, or call Eric Woodstrom at 223-6652. Online at fivestarbank.com. Five Star Bank, professional, progressive, and personal. Member FDIC. Equal housing lender.
Founded in 1995, GI Pathology is the only physician-owned laboratory in the United States dedicated solely to the practice of gastrointestinal and liver pathology. The company provides the highest quality GI pathology diagnosis made exclusively by one of our fellowship-trained gastrointestinal and liver pathologists. GI Pathology delivers results to its Northern California client base within an industry-leading 24 hours. Call 888-2-GI-PATH or go to www.gipath.com for more information.
Hey, it's Bad Bob, producer for Free Fire Radio, the very best way to start your day in the North State. Every Monday through Friday from 7 to 9, Carl and Linda Bott bring you what's happening in our community, from politics to entertainment and the issues you care about. If you like what you're hearing, won't you please tell a friend that local live radio is what we're all about? I love my job. Tune in and find out why, right here, Monday through Friday, 7 to 9 a.m., on the home of Free Fire Media, KCNR 1460.
You can take us with you anytime, anywhere, live with our streaming audio feed at KCNR1460.com.
Well, we're moving on up, moving on to the east side, to a deluxe apartment in the sky. Moving on up, to the east side, we finally got a piece of the pie. Fish don't fry in the kitchen, a beef don't burn on the grill. Took a whole lot of trying just to get up that hill.
We're back, and we're moving on up. Keep it going. Okay, we have a caller real quick, and it's Sally. Hey, Sally, what you got?
Well, I just wanted to invite the listeners to get on our semi-monthly team call tonight. And here is the number. They can access it, 1-712-770-4114. And the access code is 307-268 hashtag. And it's on for an hour, and if you get in the chat room, you can ask questions or just listen to what's going on and get caught up on what's the latest news with the state of Jefferson.
Okay, again, that's 1-712-770-4114, and the access code is 307-268 pound sign or hashtag.
Exactly.
Okay.
And to answer Bob's question about where the RCRC meeting is, it is in Sacramento on Wednesday the 15th at 1215 K Street.
And that's on at Suite 1650.
Yep.
Okay, perfect. And anybody can go, right?
All right. Thank you. Good program, guys.
Thanks, Sally.
Bye.
Bye.
Okay, with that, we have our guest, Dean Wilson, former sheriff of Del Norte County. Hey, Dean, how you doing?
Good. How are you doing this morning?
Doing well.
Good.
Maybe you could give the folks a little background on yourself.
Sure. I was mostly born and raised here in Del Norte County, which is, of course, on the coast, right on the northern border. And I went to college here locally at the College of Redwoods and then down to Sac State, graduated in 79 and came back and was able to get a job with the Crescent City Police Department here. Worked there for 23 years, at which time I ran for office of the sheriff for Del Norte County, and I was fortunate enough to get elected and serve here in Del Norte County for 12 years.
Well, you know, on this sanctuary city, or as they call it, the indivisible city, that's the new term, I know you have some opinion on that. We talked a little bit about that. We really want to get your take on it, being a former sheriff, and being so active as you have been in these types of issues.
Yes, you know, back in 79 when I first started law enforcement here, and I, you know, you often hear about them talking about, you know, there's no way that you can, you know, deport this many illegal immigrants to the United States, and you're never going to do that given the huge changes that have come under the immigration department's rules and policies, as well as what you have seen the attitude towards immigration, illegal immigration, in the law enforcement, and this how the states are handling it, with whether you talk sanctuary cities or now sanctuary states. Back in 1979, if I stopped someone here locally and they had no documentation, no papers, no license, driver's license, they would be taken immediately into jail because you could not identify that individual. And you couldn't issue them a citation, couldn't release them without some proof of who they were. During that process, which would, back then, of course, would take much longer than it does today with computers and fingerprinting, which can be done, you know, almost instantaneously these days, As you were trying to identify them, we would contact immigration because they were undocumented illegal immigrants. And simply for the fact that we picked them up on driving without a license, they would be picked up within days because we had constantly buses moving through, immigration buses moving through our counties, and they would pick them up and deport them. And this was routine. This was done, you know, for very minor violations. That's all changed, and it used to be that if they were arrested for a crime and once they were convicted, they would be deported, or if they were arrested and they had no documentation, they would be deported. Now, unless the illegal is going to be charged with a violent felony or a violent crime, and you often hear these governors talking about, well, we abide by federal law if they commit these violent crimes. And that is a huge change in immigration policy. That is a huge change in the ideas of immigration and how we deal with illegals and deportation that has occurred over the 34 years that I've been in law enforcement. And that is dramatically changes how we interact with those that are undocumented and living in our country. I know one of the things that I've seen with the speed of identification, with fingerprinting being able to be computerized and identification, is that we would often find these illegals that we would arrest here. Many of them would have multiple identifications that had been given to them, where they had been taken in and booked under different names or different identifications or different papers in different counties and all throughout the state, you know, or sometimes other states. And you would get hits on them now that these things are joined, these computer systems are joined, and identification can become very easily through their fingerprints anymore.
So I have a quick question, Dean. How do you know where to deport them to if you can't identify them? I mean, if they speak Spanish, for instance, they could go to any one of the South American countries, right? So how do you know where to deport them to?
And that's a very difficult situation. And that comes from, you know, immigration working and questioning the individual and trying to identify them by some other means. Because oftentimes, you know, what we would see in our criminal-based databases is we would link this individual back to the first time they were arrested within the state of California. But there's no guarantee that that was their real or true name. That just became the basis of identifying them for the state, not necessarily that individual was who that truly was by their birth or by their given name. And so, it makes it very difficult when you're dealing with illegals because you have no proof, you have no documentation. But that rests with the federal authority to make that determination. It doesn't rest with local authority.
So then the local...
But you have to have the cooperation of local authority.
Right.
To identify and to isolate these individuals for the federal authority, for ICE and for immigration authorities, to then come and take and be able to deal with their deportation to their proper state of origin or country of origin.
Okay, so then once you get that figured out, then they're deported or are they just released or are they already released by the time you figure it out?
Again, because of the way that the changes in immigration policy have gone, these individuals would have been turned, back when I first started, they would have been turned immediately over to immigration.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's their authority. It's under the federal authority that this is done. But those policies have changed to where we no longer identify, or even bother with minor offenses, whether it be drunk driving, whether it be theft, whether it be, you know, vandalism or drunken public, or narcotics, minor narcotics offenses. We no longer even bother. Those are handled locally. They're adjudicated locally. If they even see a day in court, because oftentimes they won't go to court. But in many cases, that's all done locally anymore, unless it's a violent felony and unless there's going to be charges pressed.
So who made those decisions?
ICE won't be, immigration won't be coming to pick these people up.
So who made those decisions that those changes were to occur? Was that done locally or was that done by the feds?
That was done by federal authority.
Okay.
As to what they would prioritize. You know, like I say, the immigration buses don't come through anymore. I mean, these are changes that were done on the federal level.
Who was making those decisions and what time period did that occur?
You would have to look back. So some of it happened during the end of the Reagan administration, others further in through the Bush administrations as well as the Clinton. So it's been a gradual change, lessening what types of crimes and what types of incidents immigration would respond to.
Okay.
Well, with that, we have Mark Baird on the other line. Hey, Mark, you there?
Mark?
Yes.
Okay. Good morning, Mark.
Good morning. How are you guys today?
Good. Did you hear Dean on the other side?
Yes, I could hear Dean. I don't know. Can he hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you, Mark.
Okay, good.
Oh, Okay. I wanted to ask Dean a question, and I want to set this up with a real quick scenario. And by the way, Dean, thanks for your service, and you were a great sheriff, and we wish we still had you in Jefferson. But we have a situation now where voter fraud in the rural counties is documented, and it's true, and I don't want to say how I know because there are lawsuits still probably coming for that, but it is a known fact that there is voter fraud in the North State by illegal immigrants, primarily involved in the pot trade. And with the set of circumstances that we face both federally and locally, how would you, in the state of Jefferson, how can we establish a legal system so that we can send illegals back where they belong, get rid of criminal illegals, and stop this voting fraud? In other words, what type of framework do we need so that we can secure our border and we can provide a safe place for the people who came here legally and the people who are citizens here to raise their families?
Sure. You know, the biggest hurdle that any state has to cross is getting federal changes in immigration enforcement policy. Because unless you change the immigration enforcement policies on the federal level, it doesn't matter what you do on the state level, because through the Arizona decision, it clearly places, you know, when Arizona basically said, if you're not going to defend our borders, we're going to defend our borders. And the courts decided that, you know, no, that basically that clearly rests within the authority of federal jurisdiction and the Arizona, the state does not have the authority to, you know, basically enforce immigration laws within their own state. And so it became very problematic for states, you know, if you want to, you know, basically do or not do, the policy clearly rests within federal authority. And so the main thing is you have to change the federal enforcement policy, go back to the way it was where they enforced the laws that were written on the books and did not wait until serious violent crimes were being committed by those that are in our country illegally before immigration action is taken.
So essentially what we need to do is we need to have a constitution that has a very clear framework and a very clear set of rules and laws, and then as citizens of Jefferson, we need to ensure that everyone knows how important it is to petition the federal government to enforce the law, that the laws that are on the books now, so that our people have a hope of having a fair chance at success.
Yeah, because again, you can do enforcement practices within your own state, but unless you have the federal government's, you know, taking the action that needs to be taken, and that is to take individuals that are here illegally, and to send them back to their countries of origin. There's nothing you as an individual state can do other than, you know, identify them and you know, but to deport them out of this the country, that fully rests in the hands of the federal authority. And so, again, getting the federal authority to just enforce the laws that are on the books, because for many years they just ignored them.
Yeah, boy, they sure did. We also had another thing we can do locally is we can kind of poke at our district attorneys, because we had 30 voter fraud cases come up to the district attorney and he hasn't prosecuted a single one of them.
You know, some of the issues, especially around voter fraud, is the fact that, you know, many of these individuals, you know, carry false documentation with them, because without it, they can't get jobs, they can't work. Now that California, of course, that we've given them identification, driver's licenses and other identification processes that they can go through. But we don't link that to our criminal database. The fingerprints and other things aren't linked to our criminal database.
Why isn't that? That seems like that'd be identifying 101, is that they would be linked to the criminal database, at least their fingerprints.
Yeah, they took very good care in not having that done immediately because of the fact that they did not want to discourage individuals from coming in and you know, getting identification if they had the proper paperwork. I mean, because they, that's one of the hurdles they have to have. They have to have paperwork from Mexico or from other, from their state of or birth of origin. They have to have some kind of documentation to prove that they are who they are. But again, you know, they wanted that to be done because a lot of that impetus was not only from groups that support illegal immigration, but also it was from the insurance industry, because more than half of the accidents that were occurring in the greater Los Angeles area were hit-and-run accidents, because of the fact that many of the individuals that were involved in these accidents either had, you know, some kind of criminal issue, or they were unlicensed, or they were undocumented. And so because of this vast amount of money that was being lost in paying off these accident claims, and the insurance industry was very lobbying very heavily with the state to provide identification to and driver's licenses to undocumented to illegal immigrants in the state of California.
So, okay, they get an ID, but they don't have insurance.
You know, again, that's another problem. But they can get a license to drive, and again, it's you know, many of the issues that, you know, we came up with when I was in law enforcement is you'd have, you know, cars rolling around here that were insured or licensed to those that were legal, but the person driving the car was illegal, because again, people would go out and buy cars and put them in their own name or put them in somebody else's name. Because they were getting paid for it, you know, they would receive money to do this for the illegal immigrant, so that they would have a car, so they could actually drive.
Wow.
In California. So, you know, there's lots of ways that they got around it, false documentation, but oftentimes they would just use individuals that were here legally to provide them the mechanisms and means to be able to move about on the roadway without being stopped by law enforcement, you know, because you had an unregistered vehicle.
Well, guys, we've got to go to a break. So once we come back, you can both hold through. Yes?
Yeah.
I was going to go so I could hear the rest of the show on the air. Do
okay.
You want me to hang on?
If you have another question, sure.
Oh, no, I don't have any more questions. I just thanks, Dean, for coming on. Great show, and I'm going to go so I can hear it on the air because I can't hear it so well through the phone.
All right. Thank you, Mark.
All right, Mark. Good talking to you.
Time has come for 51, folks.
Yes,
here we go. We do have a line free if someone wants to call in at 605-4567, 605-4567 if you have a question for Dean Wilson or you have a question for us.
When I turned 18, I couldn't wait to vote. After all, voting is a privilege for all Americans, right? Then I did the math. Did you know that the northern third of California only has 3 out of 80 seats in the Assembly and 3 out of 40 seats in the Senate? Northern California has no representation, and my vote doesn't count. Splitting from California and forming the state of Jefferson is the only remedy. Please visit SOJ51.net for more information. Please donate now to help restore representation.
Orchard Nutrition Center knows that your time is valuable. Now you can place your deli order online, and we'll have it ready when you're ready. Visit Orchard Nutrition Center's Facebook page and click on the Use App button. From there, you can select to order delicious deli items such as deli cheeses, meats, a variety of fresh-made salads, or you can select to build your own custom deli sandwich. Choose from a variety of freshly baked breads. Add your favorite cheese, meat, condiments. And don't forget to add your favorite veggies. And if you'd like to add some extras, that's okay. Create your sandwich your way. And now you can pay online with our secure online checkout, and your order will be ready in 30 minutes. Whether a single item or a large order for your office or family, skip the checkout lines and log on to Orchard Nutrition Center on Facebook at OrchardNutrition.com or download the Orchard Nutrition Center app from Google Play or the App Store. Orchard Nutrition Center, Cypress Square Shopping Center, Reading.
It's termite swarm season again when termites quickly expand their already large colonies. Because of the quiet and hidden nature of termites, they are often undetected until the damage has already occurred. If you suspect your house has termites, call the professionals at Big Time Pest Control immediately for a free estimate. Big Time Pest Control will guarantee extermination of termites, insects, spiders, and rodents. Call 530-242-8830. Big Time service at a price you can afford. Big Time Pest Control.
Learn more about our shows and hosts. Check us out online at kcnr1460.com.
JoJo was a man who thought he was a loner, but he knew it couldn't last. JoJo left his home in Tucson, Arizona, for some California grass. Get back, get back, get back to where you once belonged.
Back. Dean, you still hanging in there with us?
You betcha.
All right, cool. Hey, got a quick question. Do you know
sure.
who is on the RCRC board in Del Norte that is going to be either supporting or, you know, with the sanctuary city restriction? Do you know anything about that?
I know about the RCRC board. You know, currently, I'm not sure. Dave Finnegan used to be on our RCRC. In fact, he at one time when I was sheriff, he was actually president of RC or head of RCRC. For 1 year, so I'm not sure who currently you know chairs or helps or goes and sits on that board for Del Norte County.
Okay,
because Dave is gone now. So.
Oh, okay.
Well, I don't know if you know this or not, but the Board of Supervisors in Tehama County, Bob Williams, had brought up a resolution number 2017-16. Which basically says that Tehama County will comply with the federal immigration laws and does not constitute a sanctuary jurisdiction. And I know that Bob Williams is now the chairman of RCRC, and on Wednesday he is going to introduce this resolution to all the other counties in rural California.
It's very problematic for counties and for city jurisdictions, especially if they receive any federal funds, because part of your in receiving federal funds, when you sign that agreement to take that money, part of that agreement is that you're bound to enforce all federal laws.
Well, this is a good thing for them then. If you know, this is a good thing. This resolution,
it's very critical.
Yes,
because again, once you start to not insert, you know, go out openly and say, you know, we're just not going to do this. Is very problematic because again you put all that funding at risk. And,
well, but there,
because if the federal government chooses to,
right?
Because you fail to enforce any federal law, you can put that money at jeopardy.
Right, but this resolution is to enforce the federal laws and to stay with the federal law and not comply with the sanctuary county and the sanctuary city. I guess they're now calling the indivisible. cities, and so this resolution says exactly that they want to comply with federal law.
Right, and one of the issues that when I was sheriff, you know, and we would often meet all the sheriffs in the state together several times in the year, and that was one of the critical issues that we came with, especially on enforcement of immigration law, because the immigration notification is very clear, and so many of the sheriffs said, you know, I don't care what the state says.
Right.
Because the federal authority says we have to do this.
Right.
But the big problem is that unless you have a U.S. attorney general's office that is willing to come after the states who are declaring themselves sanctuary states or sanctuary cities, it doesn't matter because they'll go rogue as they have. You know, I see this sanctuary states, is no different than slavery of the South. When those states want to declare themselves slave states as opposed to free states, all we're doing as a sanctuary state is declaring that, we're going to, allow this group of citizens to live amongst us because of the cheap labor, because of the fact that we want to have this base of individuals within our state that we can basically take advantage of for the things that they provide to us. And we don't care what the federal law is, as they did in the South when they wanted to have that free labor, that economically beneficial labor to their state. There's very little difference in my mind between, what the South did in many of those states in declaring themselves against what the changes that were coming to free people from slavery.
You had an
we are looking at illegal immigration today.
You had an interesting take the other day when we were talking about the federal position and how it would change on a lot of this stuff in 2018 when we have the elections again. You want to expound on that? That was a pretty interesting little tidbit.
Yeah, I was part of the Tea Party in 2009 when it first gave birth, and a lot of the left in their speeches and their rallies that they're having since the day one of Trump's inauguration, as well as them talking about becoming this new Tea Party. Well, one, it's just not going to happen. So many diverse groups, so many diverse attitudes towards things. The Tea Party became what it was because we had a focus, and the focus was defined very clearly about limiting the size of federal government, about balancing our budget, about, standing to the Constitution. You don't see that in the rhetoric of the left today. I mean, it's everything from abortion to LGBT rights to, anarchy to, Black Lives Matter to communists to Code Pink to all these fringe organizations that are out there, immigration laws, et cetera. There's no cohesive gathering of to focus and to drive message forward like it was. And what you saw with the Tea Party, is that we spoke up. We spoke up in 2010, 12, and 14. And we've changed the whole complexion of the nation. Unfortunately, what I see today I was in D.C. for the inauguration. I saw the violent protest on one day. I saw the largely peaceful protest the following day. With the Women's March, and you watch what happened in Berkeley, you watch what's going on now where senators or congressmen are going back to their districts and they're being shouted down, they're being, we have the DeVos going to a school and being pushed, shoved, and threatened just trying to make a school visit, and protesters going out there. This kind of attitude, anti-American, shutting down the voices of the free speech from those on the right. If the left continues to move in that direction, I guarantee you that in 2018, when the election comes, it's not going to be like it was in 2010 and 12 for the Tea Party. It's going to be in the absolute opposite direction because Americans don't like the violence. We don't like to see this type of rhetoric and violence and the shouting down of others people's views. That truly is un-American, and those in the Tea Party, those that rose and changed the face of our federal government and our state government today, in many cases, I mean, there's only five fully democratic states now.
it's an amazing change that the Tea Party has risen up and made happen. And I tell you, if they continue to do what they're doing, you're going to end up with Donald Trump having, President Trump having a supermajority in 2018. It's not going to go the other way.
There you go. The civilest of societies. You know, that's what we're trying to be.
You know, Del Norte County, as you know, which you were probably pretty excited about, went for Trump. And,
yeah.
And I know that there's renewed interest. There seems to be a lot of it up in Del Norte County on the state of Jefferson. We had a gentleman who went up there from Nevada County, Calvin Clark, who has some businesses up there, and he talked with a lot of folks about Jefferson. I know we've been communicating again with Aaron Funk. And there seems to be a change there, a good change of attitude where people are really seeking liberty. So what's the position of what's going on with the state of Jefferson up there that you've heard?
Well, I tell you, you know, the more that we hear from the state, you know, with their initiatives, not only to become a sanctuary state, but they're also wanting to secede, you know, from the Union.
Yeah.
and become a recognized country through the UN. You know, I tell you, you know, the more that you hear that kind of talk, the more you understand just how far off the rails, you know, California and their political body has gone. I think it's driving the Jefferson message, especially for these counties to the north that have looked at this seriously already, towards, you know, ramping up the positive, you know, separation from California as California, you know, continues to spiral down into, you know, a much more, I think, you know, social decay, moral decay, and trying to break away from the United States, or at least talking it to where you actually have people within our state government actually, you know, looking at that honestly. It's driving the Jefferson message much stronger, I believe, out here in the public.
Now, I have a question for you too. We've been talking about, you know, like resources within the territory of Jefferson and each county and what they provide. Now, in Del Norte County, can you talk about your timber numbers?
Well, right now, we have huge timber standing out here because we have had zero, I mean, very little in the way of timber removal. You know, in fact, you know, one of my biggest battle cries around here is that we need to thin our forests because of the fire danger, as we, you know, you see throughout the state of California. You know, the mismanagement of our forest lands, mismanagement of U.S. forest lands and BLM lands that have led to unsafe, you know, fire conditions where they don't even abide by their own fire plans that they have been approved through both the state and the federal government to how much tonnage of fuel per acre they're supposed to allow on the grounds. In various areas of their forests. They don't even abide by those recommendations. And so, you know, they place our communities, they place our state in danger because they don't even abide by their own fire plans that these federal lands are supposed to adhere to. And so, you know, it's very, you know, important that we manage these resources. You know, here in Del Norte County, we have a huge agricultural we're the world's largest supplier of lily bulbs. And we also have dairy farms, and we also have our timber industry as well as our fishing industry. And so the resources that Del Norte County brings into any state is incredibly beneficial.
As long as we're able to use them, huh, buddy?
That's right.
Yeah. That's part of the, you know, we now have this, you know, the federal government, they, you know, created this marine park out here. Which, you know, limits, you know, the areas, some of our fishing grounds out here. And so, you know, it is very problematic as we see the overreach of federal government's authority. And hopefully, you know, with the current administration and those taking over those offices, you know, we can see that hopefully curtailed back a little bit.
Well, we have to go to our last break very quickly. And James, hang on with a question. You need to be pithy, my friend James, because we're getting down to the wire here. Time has come for 51.
Dandelion. Unique gifts and clothing is the hot spot in Reading for all things fashion. Dandelion carries an amazing selection of Brighton jewelry, all the latest clothing lines, and every woman's favorite secret weapon, Spanx. Shop wonderful gifts in all price ranges and receive the best service in town. Check out Dandelion at 1322 Pine Street in the heart of downtown Reading. Dandelion.
Did you know that Article 4, Section 3 of the U.S. Constitution lays out the framework for the state of Jefferson's plan to split California? A state can be formed from the land within another state if the state legislature and Congress approve it with a simple majority vote. 51% is all it takes. Your vote doesn't count in Northern California. California is broken and the time has come for 51. Please visit SOJ51.net and donate now to show your support.
Join the conversation online in our chat room, KCNR1460.com.
I have a hurricane, listen to yourself, churn world, serve its own needs, dummy, serve your own needs, feed it up an ox, speak, grunt, no strength, the ladder starts to clatter with fear, fight down, high choir and a fire, representing seven games in the government for hire and a combat site. Left to west are coming in a hurry with the furies breathing down your neck. Team, my team, reporters, battle Trump, check the crop, look at that, no plane, fine, then, uh-oh, overflow, population common.
We're back with Dean Wilson from Del Norte County, and James is on the line. James, we have about 3 minutes left. Make it pithy, my friend.
Okay, guys. Thanks, everyone. My question is on these cities and counties that declare themselves sanctuary counties and cities. You know, isn't that in fact an act of sedition? I mean, where do you draw the line? Is when the Constitution clearly says that the federal government has the right to enforce immigration law, and these counties and cities openly, you know, pass measures saying that they will not force federal law. Isn't that a prosecutable act of sedition?
What's your position on that, Dean?
It basically there's a lot that you would be able to do before you would have to, you know, even consider something like sedition, but it absolutely is. I mean, when you have, you know, cities, states basically coming out and saying that, you know, we're just not going to enforce, you know, federal law. But the biggest hurdle that the biggest problem that these cities and counties and states have, is, you know, as some people have said, there's a new marshal in town, and we will see what the U.S. Attorney General is going to do, because under Holder, they did not, you know, even in Lynch, they did not care. There was going to be no action taken against these sanctuary cities or sanctuary states. In fact, they, you know, they didn't discourage it. They just went along with it. They took no action against them. They did not reduce their funding. They did not take away their funding and threaten them in any way. And so, you know, with a new president and a new attitude, and if they just enforce the laws on the books, and, you know, the U.S. Attorney General, you know, puts these cities and states on notice and punishes them through loss of funding, it'll quickly change.
Well, hopefully
it'll quickly change.
Hopefully Sessions will do that. We have 1 minute left. Dean, I want to thank you so much for coming on. You've been a great guest. Would you come on with us again sometime?
Yeah, anytime.
Great. Okay, well, thank you very much. And
great question, James.
Thank great you. Question, James. Well, folks, time has come for 51. Tomorrow night, 6 o'clock, 3276 Bocelli Lane.
4:30 for the Jefferson meetings.
You bet. Okay, guys. We'll keep your powder dry.
There you go. The time has come for 51.
I feel no shame. I'm proud of where I came from. I was born and raised in the boondocks. One thing I know, no matter where I go.
Sovereign Minds is next at KCNR, Shasta, Reading.
News this hour from townhall.com. I'm Michael Harrington. President Trump is not giving up on his temporary travel ban, even though it's on hold at the moment. White House advisor Stephen Miller says the administration will fight in court and might consider a rewrite of the order.
We are contemplating new and additional actions to ensure that our immigration system does not become a vehicle for admitting people into our country who are hostile to this nation and its values.
Miller was a guest on Fox News Sunday. The Northeast bracing for a winter blast of snow and strong winds that could take the title of biggest storm of the season from the one that just dumped up to 19 inches of snow days ago. Winter storm warnings are in effect from upstate New York to Maine, where blizzard conditions and 2 feet of snow are possible. The National Weather Service says up to 19 inches of snow.